Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday, it's October 28th. Let's see, currently we've got 18 degrees here in Old Town Park City under clear skies, and Heber City reporting 22 degrees at the airport. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, we have meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go throughout your Tuesday. Look for lots of sunshine as we go throughout today as high pressure is in charge. But, of course, it is a frigid start with those temperatures this morning in the teens and 20s across most of the area. As we go throughout the day, that sunshine will hopefully boost our temperatures back to the mid-40s for highs in the Park City area. We're looking at high temperatures climbing into the lower 50s in the Heber Valley. As we head into your Wednesday, look for that sunshine to be around. Another frigid start to the morning as temperatures dip down into the 20s. We'll see those highs climb back to near 60 as you go into the Park City area for your Wednesday afternoon, with highs in the low 60s in the Heber Valley. Once we get towards your Thursday, look for that sunshine to remain across the area as high pressure is large and in charge. We're going to be seeing that sunshine helping to warm those temperatures from the 20s to low 30s early on Thursday morning, to high temperatures in the mid to upper 50s in Park City, with highs in the low 60s in the Heber Valley. Once we get towards your Friday, you guessed it, high pressure keeps that sunshine around. Temperatures starting off below freezing, but we rebound into the mid 50s by Friday afternoon in Park City. We'll see those highs in the low 60s in the Heber Valley. Your weekend forecast will feature a few extra clouds as a disturbance rolls by the area. That'll keep temperatures right around freezing early Saturday morning, with high temperatures in the upper 50s in Park City on Saturday afternoon. Highs will be in the low 60s in the Heber Valley. We'll see a few extra high clouds around the area, but overall not too bad. Otherwise, looking at your Sunday, the sunshine returns. Temperatures back into the low 60s for highs in Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid to upper 60s there for the Heber Valley. And as we get into the beginning of next week, we'll stay in the 60s for highs both in Park City and in the Heber Valley, with low temperatures warming up into the 30s across the area. Overall, pretty quiet weather a pattern ahead for the next 7 days. Halloween is looking quiet and calm, and as we go into the weekend, looking good. Don't forget, we do fall back this weekend, so we set those clocks back now. Let's look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up this morning on the local news hour, I'll be checking in just a minute with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. We'll take a look at the agenda for Wednesday's county council meeting. Tracy Harden with the Citizens Climate Lobby and Corey Shadrick with the Proactive Alliance have details about an on-demand candidate forum. Terry Orr and Barry Nan Rothschild with details on this year's TEDx Park City event that's happening this Thursday. Well, the Summit County Council meets Wednesday in work session starting at about 3:55 and opens with a work session on next year's budget. On the phone with a preview, I have Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning, Shane. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so first, with news from last week, the council approved a 3-year extension for you on your contract. Councilmember Roger Armstrong telling us that you're doing a good job. What did you tell them that you think your best work has been these past few years?
Well, I listened to Roger's interview last week. I appreciated what he said, especially around those first few years of any new position like this are, you know, I think he used the term drinking from a fire hose. And I think that was fair. I felt like it at that moment in time in early 2023, I felt like I got thrown in the deep end. But I really believe that I learned to swim. It's been very important to me to be a part of this community. I feel like I've really embraced that, and the community has embraced me in return. So after 3 years, I think the honeymoon is well past over, and we need to continue to keep some consistency and really get some projects done. And I think we're doing that. I think we're doing a lot of really exciting things. And this week on the council agenda is one of those really important weeks we're having.
Yeah. Well, looking ahead at the next 3 years, then, I mean, what are some of the things that council said that they would like you to be working on?
I feel like the Olympics is kind of this overarching event that we're all preparing for. It's such a small portion and moment in time, if you will, for us to be prepared for. At the same time, we have ongoing operational transit, transportation, housing issues in our community that we need to deal with. And I'm really excited to be working with our staff and other organizations like Park City Municipal and the other municipalities on all of these really exciting challenges that we have. And I look at those as challenges. I'm currently joining you by phone today because I'm at the International County and City Manager Association's annual conference, and we're talking about AI and the housing challenges that plague almost everyone at least in the United States. All these similar challenges are just are opportunities, I think, for us to tackle together, and I'm really excited about that.
Okay, we'll talk more about that in later interviews. Moving on to the budget discussion for Wednesday, you've set aside about an hour for this discussion. Is this the rolling out of your recommended budget, or has that already been done?
Well, the recommended budget has been presented to the council, and what we're trying to do with these, every week we are meeting until December 3rd, and we actually have set aside a couple of special budget sessions, if necessary. I think at least one of those will be necessary. And we're trying to give a more detailed overview of the entire budget in sort of these little snippets and deep dives. For example, last week we talked about some of our sales tax projections. This year, for fiscal year 26, for next year, we're projecting that sales taxes will be a little softer than they have been, a little flatter than they have been. So we talked about that, what our justifications for those projections are, and we obviously always want council feedback on are we hitting the mark, are we missing the mark, how did you envision this when we talked, for example, at our work plan meeting just last month. In that plan, we talked a lot about some of the staff. Some of the staff's vision in meeting the council's vision and some of the resources they would need. And so we're really hoping this budget kind of puts all that together in a document that we can then execute on next year.
Yeah, and as we reported last week, there is a possible ESST or Emergency Services Sales Tax increase being proposed up to 1.1%. What does your budget recommend? And I guess how much are you hoping to raise?
Well, so let me ask you a clarifying question. The emergency services sales tax was that tax, the voter approved tax from November of last year.
Okay, then I got it wrong. So, no, I'm talking about what the state legislature.
We're calling the impacted communities tax or the resort communities tax. You're right. That is part of our presentation tomorrow. Will be from Matt Levitt, our finance director, and Dave Thomas from our legal team about a new ordinance that would implement this new impacted communities tax. It would affect sales taxes throughout the unincorporated area of the county. And it is up to 1.1%. The council has some discretion there to go less than that. But this was something we've been advocating for. It's a new a change to existing code to where before the last legislative session, Summit County could not impose such a tax. There was no mechanism for that. It was only available to municipalities. Now the counties that have meet certain criteria around those impacts of tourism have an opportunity to do this. This tax for us is it's restricted to transportation and transit projects, but we have a lot of needs when it comes to those projects with bus rapid transit and all the transit, exciting transit things High Valley Transit is doing, and our obviously our congestion needs. We have a lot of transportation projects we think we can use this tax to mitigate some of those impacts on our residents. So that's kind of the thought process of that. If we did implement this tax even this week, it would take another 90 days before it was actually added, required to be added to the sales tax, and then we would be, and a couple of months after that, would start receiving this revenue.
So do you support taking that full 1.1%, given all of the transportation needs the county has?
I think the argument for implementing the full amount would be, while we know what we are faced with today in these impacts, transportation and transit, we don't really know what tomorrow brings. And we're really trying to ramp up some of these projects we've looked at. A lot of them are on 224, even around the Kimball Junction area. I think the projects that we need today, we think we could do with less. We could do with less than 1.1%. But what I don't want to see us do is add a tax and then add it more to it because we need to. So there's those two kind of contracting arguments about whether we could to go to the full 1.1% and or maybe to back off a little bit. I've heard both from council. I've heard some that would like to go to the full amount and some that would like to back off. So I think it'll be a good, nice, robust conversation tomorrow around. And I think if you looked at our slides there that we produced, that we show what the revenue might be at some different levels there at less than 1.1%.
Okay. Now, is the county also looking at an increase at the transient room tax?
Not necessarily. That's not in my budget. Okay. It's something we are always aware of. You probably know that we are one of two counties that does not go to the full 4.25%, and we're only at 3%. And I think for now that's sufficient. That's always on the table. And if you look at the slide deck there tomorrow, another opportunity besides the emergency service sales tax is that we can now use transient room tax to also mitigate the impacts of tourism. So I feel like this is a major priority of the council is we have a lot of visitors come to our area. How do we make it palatable for these visitors to come and still make it the wonderful community that we know and love? How do we thread that needle to have visitors here, but also have them be a net positive to us as they come? So,
what's the timeline for the budget approval this year?
We are having we scheduled the December 3rd public hearing for the adoption of the budget at the Richens Building, and then December 10th would be the public hearing out in Colville at the county courthouse, and we would tend to adopt it at that second meeting in December. That's the plan today.
All right. Let's see. At 5:25, the county council will discuss and possibly approve an interlocal cooperation agreement between the county on behalf of the county clerk's office and North Summit School District. Is this for the bond election?
That is my understanding, yes. It is for the county clerk's office to run that election for that bond election for North Summit School District.
Yeah, and I guess I don't recall seeing something like this before. Isn't it the clerk's job to monitor elections?
Yes, I mean, they do that. I actually had exchanged some phone calls with our county clerk, Eve, over the last couple of days about this because I wanted to know a little bit more about it myself. And I'm with you. I haven't seen these agreements before. When I've worked for other cities, we would actually a contract with the county to run our elections. So I think cities are able to do that if they'd like to. School districts, I think, would be, I think they need a special agreement for this bond election. I think it's just a little different and outside the scope in that regard. But I do have some questions myself.
Yeah. So how much does the school district have to pay to have the county clerk do it, the election for them?
I didn't see that. I looked through the agreement, but I didn't see how much it was. It's been $20,000 for cities for a long time, but that's probably an outdated number.
Okay. That council will also discuss and possibly approve an ordinance number 999 to issue and sell $99 million in bond. How will this money be used?
So that is the impact of communities tax. So if they did implement the tax in an ordinance, they would then bond against it in a resolution. So there's two actions in that one item. And that would be the money for these transit and transportation projects. I think a lot of what we'd like to do, we certainly want to do ahead of 2034. And even in the next 3 to 5 years, there are going to be a lot of projects that we're trying to break ground on. I think now is the time to, if we're looking for federal dollars for an Olympic-related a project of any sort, I think today and over the next couple of years is really when we need to see those monies, to advocate for those monies. I think if we bring some skin in the game, if you will, with some of this tax, we're much more likely to get some federal funds from our federal delegation. They have expressed an interest in helping us around the Olympics and those impacts. So I think this is my council being proactive about what the next three to 5 years looks like. And so I know $100 million sounds like a lot of money. This resolution is what's called a parameters resolution. It sets the ceiling. So we wouldn't bond for more than that. We could bond also in a series of bonds. It wouldn't need to be, here's $100 million tomorrow. It would be, okay, this project and this project and this project are going to be $30 million. We could bond for that amount, and then we could bond for more later too. So the ceiling, I think, in the guardrails is what's important about this resolution, but it gives us the opportunity to find new projects and do a lot of good here in the community.
Okay, so setting the ceiling as much as you could possibly could, but we don't know what that's going to be at this point.
That's exactly right. And we also don't know, well, I said this in the meeting last week, I hope we get a lot of participation from grants and state and the federal government and maybe even other organizations on some of these projects. So we're trying to plan for the worst, the highest, and then we certainly hope that a lot of that will be funded by other sources as well.
So what does that mean for our property taxes in the coming years, having to pay off $100 million in bonds?
Well, we do bond. We're bonding against that sales tax, so that should be the revenue source that would pay for that bond. I think, ironically, I would say, we are also being so cautious about property tax increases that's why this sales tax makes a lot more sense to some of those that, you know, some of the council and the staff, is a lot of those impacts of these sales taxes come from visitors. And I know that you and I will still feel this impact when we buy things in the county, but I think it's less of an impact than it would be if we did a property tax increase. You've probably seen there's counties across Utah that are going through truth and taxation for next year, and the reasons why they are doing that have been increasing costs of providing services, increasing cost of personnel. It's been really your cost of living increases over the past few years that are catching up to some of our counties, and we're not immune to that. We feel these same pinches, and unfortunately for us, we have this other revenue source where we don't need to go through truth and taxation. We can replace some of the costs we would with this sales tax that we would normally have to go through a property tax increase.
Okay, let's see. The county has yet to close on the 910 Cattle Ranch purchase, and we keep hearing the money's in escrow. So what's the holdup?
It's just right there. Leslie, I just want to go to like the front desk and say, hey, write the check and just hand it to me. We're so close. It really is the federal shutdown that has, it's not the money so much as it is some of the procedures around it, some appraisals and things that the shutdown of the government has just caused everyone to either be furloughed or the work's just not getting done. But we are so close. It doesn't feel right now like a financial problem. It just feels like a procedural problem. And we're hoping that when the government opens up, it will just be another couple of weeks and we'll be able to close almost immediately. We're just knocking on wood, fingers crossed, praying, whatever you need to do. We're just really, really close. We're at the final end here.
All right. Well, now what about a lawsuit over the property? As part of the land deal, the county had to defend a lawsuit from a property owner who wants to build a road on the land.
That lawsuit won't affect the closure. It's something that came with the purchase. We are aware of it when we signed the option agreement. It's something that we feel confident in as we move forward. It really isn't something we're worried about. Absolutely, lawsuits are always concerning in some regard, but we've got our legal team on it, and that should not affect the closing of the property in any way.
All right, so the neighboring property owner has a sliver of a parcel between the 910 and Salt Lake County on the west side. Have they explored building a road from the other side?
I don't think so. I think they have just wanted to come from the basin side, but I have not been interacting in any way with this with the lawsuit or with the property owner. It's I think once the legal team's involved, the conversations unfortunately go end, and we have to have attorneys hash it out, which, as you know, takes now years instead of days to kind of get some things done. But it's completely in their hands.
My understanding that there is a hearing on the lawsuit Friday at noon. What's the status of the case, and I guess what's the expected outcome?
I just couldn't say. I mean, we are always confident in these. If we didn't think we could win a case, we wouldn't be taking it. We would be trying to resolve it in some manner. I think we actually have made those efforts as well. I think we've been so far apart in our resolutions that it unfortunately has to go to a judge. But again, we feel very confident in our interpretation of what this property owner is trying to require.
Okay, and finally wanted to ask you about Recycle Utah. The county, as we've reported, is giving Recycle Utah a 4-acre parcel of property near Home Depot for its next location. And that was after, I believe, Park City donated the land back to the county. So how will the deal actually work? I mean, does Recycle Utah own the property, or will they have to lease the property?
I think that both of those options are in play. We would like to do whatever it takes for Recycle Utah to be successful on that property. They seem very excited to continue operations. To what degree, that's probably maybe yet to be determined. But we are looking at an agreement with Park City where we had an obligation to provide them land, and they will waive that obligation if we provide this land to Recycle Utah. And then Recycle Utah and Summit County will have some kind of an agreement as well to provide some sort of recycling and solid waste services on that property. If Recycle Utah can continue to operate how they have been, that's super exciting. That's going to be a really nice spot for us to have people come and go a little bit easier than they were on Munchkin. I think it's a really exciting opportunity, and I think we're completely aligned in moving forward together in this. I think the agreements still need to have some tweaks to work out, but we're hoping to do that in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, if Recycle Utah decides to lease the property, I mean, would there be payments required as opposed to just an outright donation of the land?
I think our intention would not be to have any sort of payments. If we retain the land, I think it would be a 99-year lease for $1 a year, one of those situations. We're not looking to recoup anything financially from this land. We're just wanting to make sure it gets utilized for Recycle Utah's purposes. And then, of course, if that changes in any way, we want to step in and use that land for solid waste recycling services as well. So I think we all want the same thing. We're just trying to make sure, as some of our wise council members say, the devil's in the details, and we're I think we're right there in those details, trying to make sure that everybody's taken care of.
And given the property donation, if that's the way it goes, I mean, would the county be available or willing to help with other costs of getting the site built out?
I would say that's unlikely based on what I know and what I've heard. I think the land donation is such that we feel like that is going to meet this obligation. And again, if Recycle Utah is not able to continue to operate there, they are a 501c3 nonprofit on their own. They can't be sustainable on their own. We are happy to step in, and they provide such an important service, to our community. And it's a service that the county has some responsibility in as well. So we want to take recycling to a new level. We want to lower our diversion rates, and so we'd love to get them operational. But I think any more financial assistance isn't going to come from the county.
Okay. Anything else, Shane, you wanted to mention?
Could I just mention that early voting starts tomorrow and runs through Saturday. MARSAC was traditionally an election a voting center, and it is no longer a voting center. The voting center for Park City Municipal is now in the Quinn's Public Health Department building at 650 Round Valley. So that is the new voting center for Park City. Early voting tomorrow. I think it runs through Saturday. So it starts at 8 a.m. and it runs till 1 p.m. There's also early voting at the Summit County Courthouse. That's from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., except on Saturday, which is 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. So encourage people to get out there and vote, and it would be exciting to see what happens with some of our elections next week.
Okay. Shane, thanks so much for your time.
Leslie, thanks for having me.
The Wasatch Back Citizens Climate Lobby, the Proactive Alliance, and Wasatch Back League of Women Voters have partnered to provide voters with an on-demand candidate form. In the studio with details, I have Tracy Harden, president of the local chapter of the Citizens Climate Lobby, along with Corey Shadrick with the Proactive Alliance. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Leslie.
Thanks for having us.
Tracy, maybe we'll just start with you, and you can give us a brief reminder of what the Citizens Climate Lobby is and what you do.
Sure. So Citizens Climate Lobby is a national organization. We're a nonpartisan group who is lobbying for climate action at a national level. And then we also, Citizens Climate Lobby has local chapters all over the United States. I happen to represent the Wasatch Back chapter of it. And we also get involved in leading some political discussions at the local level as well.
Great. Okay. And Corey, what about the Proactive Alliance? What is it that you guys do?
So the Proactive Alliance is a grassroots community group. It was started by a group of women who were concerned about what was going on nationally and locally. And so we started a group that is nationally aware, locally focused. We promote democracy, human rights, and inclusivity through events, educational workshops, opportunities for conversation, and advocacy.
So are you guys a 501c3?
Nope, we're just a group of people who are get together and spend time.
Yeah. Is it nonpartisan?
Yes, we are nonpartisan. We're just trying to stay in touch and get people to talk about what's happening locally and what's important in our community.
So everybody invited? I mean, when and where do you meet?
We meet once a month. We have a speaker once a month at Kiln in the Kimball Junction. We also do coffee talks every Friday at the Pagelden and Kimball as well, between 9 and 10:30. And then on Sundays, we do postcard writing and just gather to talk and figure out what's happening and how we can get our voices out there.
Okay, and in terms of Citizens Climate Lobby, how often do you guys meet? Once a month as well?
Once a month. Mm-hmm. Third Saturday at Hugo's Coffee about 9:30, but we flex it. Sometimes we'll have a beer night. Sometimes we meet at someone's house, potluck. It's all on the website. They can reach out and see when.
Okay.
We meet.
Sure. There have been several in-person candidate information sessions. Why did you think that one more was needed?
Well, Citizens Climate Lobby has been doing candidate forums. But this year, because we were so aligned with what Proactive Alliance was also doing in the candidate forums, they did a really nice one for the primary. And then also the new chapter of League Women's Voters was interested. So the three of us decided to team up and do one type of an event bring our voices together. And it was really quite interesting to bring our minds together and sit around and evaluate what we're seeing and where the holes were in the discussions and what we thought voters still needed to learn.
Okay. Did you talk to just Park City candidates?
We did this time. I think because the Proactive Alliance is really kind of getting our feet wet here. We've only been around for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. We wanted to understand, you know, I think about half of our group is Park City specific, and the rest is 9-8 Summit County, Wasatch Back. But I think we're learning, and so we decided to start with this immediate group of candidates, and then hopefully we can spread it out from there.
So it looks like if people were to go online, it looks like you did this all via Zoom, some video platform.
Exactly. Yeah, we did a Zoom forum and just a one-on-one with each candidate.
Yeah. Do you think that is better than a live forum, or it's just what you could do?
I think it was. We had done the live forum previously, and I think the timing for people was easier. I think the candidates themselves, it's a really busy time for them, and we wanted to give enough flexibility for everybody to have their own unique time to talk through what they wanted to cover. And I think that gave each candidate the opportunity to schedule it out without having to lose another evening, which is important right now.
Yeah. And Tracy, tell me how you guys did this. It sounds like you had general questions for everyone and then very specific questions for each of the candidates.
Correct. So we framed it up, which each of them had time to think ahead of time and how they would respond to three questions. And then we also spent time, particularly after the forum that KPCW and the Park Record hosted, to follow up on some of those questions to get more clarity. And it actually turned out as a benefit to the candidates as well, because as with all of us, when we go in impromptu questions, right, you think I should have answered that differently, or I should have, would have, could have. And this format gave them a chance to clarify some of their responses from that forum.
Okay, so any surprises from what you heard?
I think for me it was really helpful to hear from Tana Tolley about her position at Clark Ranch, because what's confusing to I think a lot of people is the difference between the conservation easement and the 10, 15 acres that we're doing for the affordable housing. So for her to be able to distinguish between two of those, and for me it was really helpful that Tana is advocating that we need to call the affordable housing parcel by a different name other than Clark Ranch to help, you know, alleviate some of the confusion. So there was there were a few of those moments that they were able to clarify how, you know, their position.
Yeah, and how about for you, Corey? Anything kind of surprising that you learned as you asked questions?
I mean, I think everybody came across really prepared and really understanding the issues that we face here, and are really well-versed, and they've been doing their homework. So it was really nice to feel that no matter what happens, I think we're in good hands.
Mm-hmm. Will either of your organizations make any endorsements based on what you heard from the candidates?
Citizens Climate Lobby has a policy that we do not endorse candidates. We're only trying to bring the information to the public so that they are more informed. You know, when we try to draw out their stance on climate and sustainability, that was very helpful. For me, being very interested in where Park City's going from a sustainability standpoint, I feel we've stalled out a little bit in our momentum. It was very encouraging to hear from each of the candidates that this was a priority for them and they have ideas and where their strengths are to align with it. So I was encouraged.
Yeah, and what about the Proactive Alliance? Are you making endorsements?
We do not endorse candidates. We're only 6 months old, and I think we're really trying to be as inclusive as possible and not exclusive in any way. So right now, our focus is really on educating and getting the information out, making sure people have the information to vote the way that they feel is best for them.
All right. So each of the candidates were given, what, up to about 20 minutes to get through the six questions?
Yeah, they had 20 minutes and about 2 minutes. 2 minutes to answer per question. We had a couple of follow-up questions, which were about 30 seconds. So I think everyone averaged pretty close to 20 minutes total.
Okay. So how does somebody find those recorded interviews?
Yeah, we have on our webpage, theproactivealliance.org. You can click on the candidate-specific forum link. The link is actually also proactivealliance.org/PC Candidate Forum, and I think there's some underscores in there, so the easiest thing is just to go to the .org or proactivealliance.org and click on the candidate forum link there.
Okay, we'll include the link as well in any coverage that we do. Let's see, what else is Citizens Climate Lobby working on?
Right now we're having our semi-annual conference coming up in November. One of the things we're focusing on is the Fix Our Forests Act, with Senator John Curtis is one of the co-sponsors on, to help our get in there and clean our forest to prevent further damage in our wildfire. So there's a lot that right now NEPA regulations prevent going in without doing a lengthy permitting process, and they want to shorten that. So for example, if the power company sees a really big tree that's dead and dying on the transmission line, right now they can't just go in there and cut it down. There's a lengthy permitting process. So cleaning some of that up so it's easier to get in there and clean our forests up. So we're focusing on trying to get that over, and then also there's the major bill that has a lot of bipartisan support on transmission reform. So if you think of it, all of the needs of our energy needs, that is quite, we hear a lot about it in the news right now, and especially like you hear Governor Cox talking about our Operation Gigawatt, doubling our amount of power. Well, even if we double our power, we don't have the transmission lines to transport it, to get it to people. So transmission reform is helping, once again, expedite the process on permitting to get and building more transmission across the country. So both of those are focused on the national level for Citizens Climate Lobby right now.
Yeah, Senator John Curtis, of course, somewhat sympathetic to the cause. What about the rest of the Utah delegation? What are they? Are they as helpful?
Yes. I think Senator Lee is also coming on board with Fix Our Forest. And then, really, John Curtis has been amazing getting the rest of the Utah congressional group on board with climate and the changes. I think they're very anxious to get back on the floor and get some of these bills passed, but the shutdown's just slowing it up.
Yeah. Okay, and then what about the Proactive Alliance? I mean, what, beyond the election, what are you guys going to be working on?
Well, we actually, on November 5th at Kiln, between 5:30 and 7:30, we will have Shelley Jackson from the state governor, lieutenant governor's office. She's going to come talk to us about elections themselves, how they're run, and how we can be supportive on keeping, making sure that things continue to run well in the state and locally as well. We also have, again, our weekly coffees and our weekly postcards. We have a December speaker, Joel Zaro from the Community Foundation, will come and speak to us as well. So we've got, a lot of upcoming stuff, and the holidays obviously will be in there too, and I can't believe it's already the end of the year.
So any membership fees for either of your organizations?
No.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, anything else you want to let us know?
Just if you still haven't made a decision on some of the candidates or you're scratching your head on them, we encourage you to go to the site. You can also listen to specific responses. So Corey's done a great job on the website, not only looking at just an individual 20-minute interview, but you can also break it down by their responses. So if you wanted to see each of the candidates, for example, and how they felt about sustainability in Park City, you can zero in on just that question.
Okay. All right, Tracy, Corey, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, TEDx Park City returns this week, and in the studio to tell us what to expect, I have TEDx Park City organizers Terry Orr and Berrynann Rothschild. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
First, Terry, what is TEDx Park City?
TEDx Park City is one of the oldest licenses in the TED community. We're one of the first 100 licenses that they granted when they decided to let TED attendees try to do pop-ups in their own communities. So we've been doing that, gosh, since 1999. No, that's not right. 2005. Okay. 2005.
Okay. How is it that you became the Park City permit holder?
I don't know all the back of house things that TED does. So I don't know how I was selected to go to TED in the first place. You can apply now, but back in the day you had to get touched by a fairy wand. And I did, and I started going. And they wipe the slate clean every year. So if you mess up, you don't get invited back. And you don't necessarily know why.
Oh, okay. So you've been doing it every year for the last 20 years? Oh, okay. And I guess, why?
Well, again, technology, entertainment, and design. People think the E is education, and it's just not. It is the entertainment is what hooked me in when I was doing the performing arts. The technology was difficult for me. The design was thrilling, because who doesn't like good design work? And the more you learn about it, the more you understand how it influences, you know, every typeface you're looking at and every building you're looking at.
All right. So, Berrynann, when and where? I mentioned Thursday.
It's Thursday, and it's at the Eccles Center in that big, beautiful theater, but we limit ticket sales to 300 so that we have enough room for conversation during the break. We start at 6 sharp, but the doors open at 5:30, and we're going to have two sessions with a break in the middle, as I mentioned, for pizza from Red Banjo. And it's really kind of a journey for the audience. It's not you picking up your phone and deciding what you want to watch from TED. You are being given a ride. And so that's what's really fun about it. And that's why we have so much room for conversation in that break.
All right. So do you know who's going to be on stage? And it's not that they're live. It's what, videos that
yes.
you show?
Yes. So we, as a member of the TED community, I am given the live feed from the conference. So I can choose to use that or not. I'm choosing for the first time to use it. And we will run most of the opening session in the first half of this event. So the opening session is longer. When you're at TED, this will be a more condensed version. But you're going to take the ride with us that we took. And it's Carol Caldwalader, the journalist who was with the Daily Telegraph, who was fired along with a lot of her staff, I think it was 2019, when she broke the Brexit story and all about the election and all about the tech bros. And she then, after she did that story, had to go into hiding. And she left the UK and actually, I'm pretty certain she came to the States and stayed with some people in a safe house for quite a while. And Carol kicks off the TED Talks this time.
Okay, so the conference is already happen,
absolutely.
Recorded. So when was that? I mean, how relevant? How
April.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
And a lot of these talks, TED decides when they're going to, you know, cherry pick and drop them on the internet. They don't drop the whole conference ever. So they decide maybe this month we'll drop two talks and next month we'll drop four. And it's just very random.
And it's also edited. Once you get to
exactly.
the internet,
it's
been all of the bloopers and the outtakes and the ums and the ahs have been cut out, and you're not getting as much of the kind of almost tactile experience of watching somebody deliver a talk as it happens, as it unfolds.
Okay.
And that's what you'll be watching, is the uncut stuff.
And TEDx does all the editing then.
No, we're not doing any editing.
Oh, but TEDx has done the editing without taking all the ums and ahs out. No?
This is when you see something on the TED channel, if you watch a talk on Thursday night and then you see that talk's been released, so you watch Carol with what we do on Thursday night, you will see the ums and the ahs and the longer talk, and you will see maybe a facial tic or pulling on her hair. You won't see those things when you go to TED because they have buffed all that out.
Okay. And so what else have you got besides her? You said that's pretty much going to take up the first session?
Well, no, she's the first speaker in the first session. And she talks about the tech bros and what went on. And the tech bros show up later during what we do. So you're not getting a one-sided, you're getting both sides, and you're seeing how quirky everybody is when they're live on stage. There are talks that, you know, good TED Talks that are inspiring. There are TED Talks that are a stretch for me to show because I don't really get it. And I realize that other people do. So, you know, those really techie talks or science-y talks, we put those in. But you leave, I hope, with just that, with a sense of hope. Yes, things are dark and grim right now, every place on the planet. TED tries to find the best of what's going on and the most hopeful things that are going on and not stepping away from those things that are tough and ugly.
Right. And so we're going to hear from a Costa Rican diplomat, Christiana Figueres. We're going to hear from Sam Altman from OpenAI. We're going to hear from John Mackey, who founded Whole Foods. We're going to hear from Joshua Bell. So it's a wide arrangement of all representatives of those initials.
Who's the entertainment?
Well, Joshua Bell isn't bad, but there are some other entertainers that will pop up.
Okay, and then who's the design person?
I think that Sam Altman touches on design in his talk a little bit.
Yes, but I don't remember the specific design person that's also in there mm-hmm. is not a household name.
Yeah.
And so I don't remember.
Right. Yeah. Really, and it's, like you say, I mean, some of them are people you may have heard about, but just really don't know a lot about. Yeah.
Or you've never heard of them, and you never will again. They just popped up. Seriously, they just pop up on the TED stage, and all the quirky people like them, and then they're gone.
All right. So how much are tickets?
Tickets are $45, and they are at, the easiest place to find them is at TEDxParkCityUT.org. And it'll take you right to our Eventbrite page. And they are, they're limited to 300 so that we have enough, a more intimate group to be able to absorb the information.
Yeah.
And it includes the pizza.
Yeah. And is there some discussion, though, amongst the group? Or is it just kind of going from one video to the next?
It goes from one video mm-hmm. to the next, yeah, because that's what happens. I wanted the audience to have that same tsunami of information that comes at you and your head's exploding after 90 minutes. We're not going to do that exactly to you, but we're going to do a little bit of that.
Okay. Now, are you continuing to do the TEDx Women and the TEDx Youth events as well? Because
yes.
I think you have licenses for each of those.
We do. We're fortunate. There aren't many people anymore who choose to do TED Women and TED Youth. The whole TED organization has changed dramatically. And this year, the head of TED is stepping aside. There is a new head of TED who is Saul Khan from the Khan Academy. And we're all eager to see what he's going to do with it. And so this will be the last year in Vancouver, and we move to we don't know where, California, next year.
Yeah, well, he made math easy, so he's got some good ideas, I'm sure. yeah, well, I don't know that you could ever say math easy.
Math is easy? When?
But he certainly distributed it internationally and in a format that people was accessible.
Accessible.
Yeah.
And so he understands that.
Oh, I've looked at, checked him many times. So do you receive any RAP funding or any restaurant tax grant or anything to do this? Or
no, we have had some lovely individuals. This is so small and such a pop-up, and the whole even TED Women and TED Youth. Barry Nan and I have, it's a labor of love. There's no other way to say that. And we do have some great people who understand that we don't want to be in the fundraising business. We don't want to be writing grants. And we don't need a ton of money. We need some.
Okay. And so ticket sales are going to just cover, hopefully, your costs?
And some donations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else people want to know?
Just that we are looking at doing TED Women in February and TED Youth in May. TED Youth is really, Barry Nan, you say how much we love it.
Oh, it's just the best because you get to coach students through the entire process of coming up with their idea, making it something that takes hold, and then coaching them through the actual world of giving a talk that feels comfortable to them. And that's something they don't think they're going to be able to do at the beginning. Most adults don't think we're going to be able to do it when we start out. And going through that whole journey is probably the most fun I have all year.
And they have to learn that when it's one thing to rehearse your talk. It's another thing to not wear the jangly jewelry and not wear the plaid shirt with the striped pants, and that it's the whole enchilada that you're doing when you give your TED talk. Some of those kids use their TED Talks to get into, think of all the places.
Gosh, everything from a community college like SLIC, which is an amazing school, to Ivies like Harvard or Brown, and everything in between. And they get the opportunity to say, I did this thing that not everybody gets to do, and I did it well, and here's the link if you want to take a look.
Yeah,
and TED Women, as you know, it's a day. Although we did have a wonderful man who's now joined our community who came to TED Women this year because he didn't know that TED Women was about women somehow. So he's become a big fan. And we love doing that because it is a day when women get to just be in community together. They get to watch talks that aren't, we're not talking about sanitary napkins. And we're not talking about, your first love. We're talking about education. We are talking about the technology. We're talking about everything that TED talks about, but we're doing it in community with other women. And there's something special about that.
Okay. Again, this is happening TEDx Park City Thursday, October 30th at the Park City Eccles Center. Doors open at 5:30. TEDx Park City, UT.org for tickets and more information. All right, Terry, Barry Nan, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.